hope is knowing that there's a brighter future. This comes from a guy named Rick Snyder in the States. He studied positive psychology. Knowing that there's a better future, knowing that there are pathways to it, multiple pathways, and knowing that I have agency to take the next step on the path. The reason I'm hopeful is because, yeah, and I know there's a better future, and I'm actively taking steps towards that. Now, mind you, I also know that I can die on the pathway anytime. I have a certain relationship with death that I don't know, may or may not resonate with some people, but just like with Martin, if Martin Luther King, if I'm on the pathway working towards something and I don't realize it, like, I know that I'm doing my honest part and purposeful part on the pathway to it. And I'm finding fulfillment in that moment. So that's in regard to purpose and hope. Now, I have that because from a young age, there was perpetual purpose. It is, I was part of a faith community where there's an understanding the world needs me. Where I have a unique voice in this to show up. And that's why I do work with people who have an understanding of that. And again, you could be agnostic and atheist even.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. This week's episode, I sit down with Marcus Aurelius Higgs, who is an educator, family coach, and positive psychology practitioner. We get into a wide-ranging conversation about how we raise, teach, and guide the next generation. Marcus brings a grounded, research-backed perspective shaped by his work with international families, his background in education, and his personal philosophy rooted in service. Our conversation moves through gratitude practices, the science of hope, the pressure on men to define themselves solely as providers, adolescent identity formation, the 4S framework for secure families, the role of social media in shaping young people's self-narratives, and how to cultivate a persistent sense of purpose in children and teens. Marcus closes with three principles of privilege and a meditation on writing your story, even if the audience is only one person. Marcus Aurelius Higgs is the founder of ParentWise, a coaching community that helps mothers of cross-cultural teenagers stay a secure base for their children through his 4S secure family framework, safe, seen, soothed, and before building ParentWise, Marcus spent more than 20 years as an ELA educator in international schools across South Korea, Spain, Saudi Arabia, Thailand, and the Bahamas, watching how a teen's well-being rises and falls with the security they feel at home. A multicultural writer shaped by his upbringing across Alabama and California, and by Filipino and Bahamian cultures, he is a published poet and co-author of the YA novel, Coming Home to Who You Are. His core conviction is secure parents create secure teens and sovereign expression. Please check out all the ways you can find Marcus online. And a quick reminder that listening to this podcast does not establish a therapeutic relationship. This podcast is only for informational and educational purposes and has no affiliation with my therapeutic practice. If you do require support, please reach out to a licensed clinician. Now let's just jump into the episode. Marcus, welcome back to Easy Conversations. Always a pleasure to speak with you, and I'm glad we've been able to connect. It's been a while since we last did this, but yeah, I think we have quite a bit to cover, and we've been sharing things back and forth behind the scenes, so it's probably worth diving into some of those things as well. But yeah, I mean, before we jump into our discussion today, I just wanted to see how things have been on your end. You seem to be sitting outside enjoying nature, I suppose. I can't do that today. Lots of rain, but I'm sure we'll get our moment soon enough. But yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful to be here. I don't know if the video podcast or the audio will see this, but the beach is right there with the palm trees.
Oh yeah.
My father said, we're looking out at this the other week, and he said those palm trees were there when he was a kid. They were this size. So I'm in the rural part of the Bahamas. generational community is a big part. The work I do is with families. Just to back up a little bit, I smiled when you said the name of the podcast because admittedly, I forgot the name of the podcast, but I smiled because I knew every time I've talked with you has been easy conversation. So
yes,
your creation is a reflection of your character. And I was like, yeah, it feels like home. It's a wonderful.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's. I was talking about the podcast. I was at a conference last week and someone asked me, well, what is the name? And I said, Easy Conversations. But I feel like a lot of the conversations aren't so easy at times over the years. Some have been difficult, but I think just being able to sit in the space and what may seem difficult on the surface, once we get into it, it feels a lot easier to discuss. Right. And I think a lot of the times we shy away from these conversations that need to be had, especially in today's world. I feel we could use a lot more dialogue, but that may be a good starting point for what we're going to talk about today anyways. But yeah, any thoughts?
Yeah. Conversations are how we refine our thoughts, really, truly understand what we believe. Mm. And they're different places where we can do that welcome that. One is comedy, because we see the absurdity. And I think intentionally creating spaces, you call it easy conversation, but it's difficult conversations without fear of threat. So we will have conflicting ideas, conflicting views, but the conflict is not directed at you. It's directed at the idea. And that in turn creates a quote unquote easy conversation. It's like you can show up in the space and be fully yourself.
And I think one of the things I've learned, and I've mentioned it before too, is I guess in terms of framing it, it's how you come in, right? And whether or not you're attached to your idea or your opinion and how tightly you hold it. And for me, if I feel confident in the work I've done to understand what I'm speaking about, then I shouldn't feel threatened, or I don't need to feel threatened. But in that, I'm also putting myself out there that maybe there is something I can learn. And even that is obviously an opportunity, right? And sometimes we're afraid of learning something new, because that means whatever we've been holding on to no longer is valid in a way. And that can bring up fear for obvious reasons for many people. There's that discomfort around confronting something new.
That segues into our conversation, which is security. The antithesis of security, well, is insecurity, but oftentimes it's textured with a fear of losing status, fear of losing a touch on reality or understanding of what we believe to be true. It's fear.
And fear can be weaponized too, right? So yeah,
definitely.
How are you feeling in the landscape of where we find ourselves today in the world? Like, what gets you going? What gives you inspiration?
To be honest, I think that's what got me to the Bahamas, going to the Bahamas. I have dual citizenship, and I did grow up here. I did grow up in America. I say I love America, and I'm waiting for America to love itself. A lot of the fear, especially having marketing background, communications, copywriting, and so on, a lot of the fear is manufactured. And it's manufactured on stuff that is real lived experience fear. Like there's real threats out there. Social media amplifies it. And social media is the medium, but it is the messaging in the medium is fear. So that's not to knock technology, but it's what are we using that technology for? I'm still hopeful because I know I'm doing my part to do what I can. I recognize my privilege in able to find some respite and some peace of mind out here. But the duty of privilege is to secure others. So we've been here before as a people, and we've been through it because that's what the human spirit does. But going through it is not easy. And yeah, do your part because life supports those who support life. That's why while this time I have it, I have to secure others. I have to secure, it's three relationships, secure myself, to secure my community into something greater, into more meaningful work. That's the third one, into nature, into a higher existence, greater forces, greater powers, respecting of all beliefs. But because I understand that there's a loop, that greater has also supported me. I'm a part of it. And yeah, that's where I find myself. There is a lot of BS, a lot of bad stuff out there, but just trying to find and align myself with that which sustains life.
That it's interesting because I relate to the privilege piece as well, where you get to a point where you've been given opportunities and you can seize them, right? And then it's what are you doing with those opportunities? And the privilege piece comes in terms of how are you then supporting others? How are you giving back? And that definitely comes up for me. And it was interesting that you're talking about the fear piece, and what was coming up also was when I'm talking to a lot of the clients I work with, and we're talking about just even gratitude in general, there's a bit of a resistance. Like, why do gratitude? Like, what's the importance? Like, or I'm struggling with this, or I'm having a really hard time identifying things I'm grateful for. I could do it for a few days, but then after a while, it becomes a bit more challenging. And I think that's such a beautiful opportunity to fight past that resistance. And the reason why I tie it to fear is because the way I've been able to frame it is, as humans, we are designed to respond to threat, to identify threat in order to survive. And it takes that additional work to train the brain in a way to look at things that are not a threat, things that we can be grateful for. But I feel like it's almost like the laziness sometimes we see in arguments, where you can identify the fear and just grow that, as opposed to looking at, well, there are things to be grateful for. And maybe it doesn't have to be just gratitude. Just, you touched on hope as well, and that's something we had talked about recently.
Putting you're good.
Things out there, but yeah, how would you tie all of that together?
With a bow. To touch on gratitude, to use, I'll give you my understanding, my thoughts on this, using your language. So we have ants, coming from Dr. Edmund, Dan Edmund, the brain doctor, talks about automatic negative thoughts. We're conditioned to look at threats because we're constantly scanning the environment to say, can I be myself without fear of threat? Gratitude, as I presented to my learners, I used to teach grade 12, 9, and 5th grade. I was an English language arts teacher, but we had this gratitude practice at the beginning of each class where everybody had to present three things, or not everybody, but from the group, we'd get 3 points of gratitude. And I said, think of something that took the initial action for your well-being without you even asking. My heart is beating. I didn't ask it to. My mother, maybe she prepared breakfast for me. I didn't ask her to. My great-great-great-grandfather built the plot on this land or so. But it's like thinking about things and people that acted for your well-being even before, like you didn't ask it to. That's why I believe in higher forces, greater powers of the trees. They put forth coconut, mangoes, and fruits. Sun rises, gives me energy. Like, I didn't ask for any of that. And that's what I'm grateful for. So like, regardless of whatever I acknowledge it or not, the world is taking care of me. But I made that a practice, so it's easier to flow into gratitude, right?
Yes, yes.
Next thing I'll say on that is, the same coin, but on the different side, taking the initial action for the well-being of others regardless of who they are, but because of who you are, that's love. And that creates the virtuous cycle of, I know there's love in the world because I'm producing love. So I'm looking for spaces and places where love is being produced for me, i.e. gratitude. It's hard to get into that cycle of a virtuous cycle if you can't recognize gratitude and if you can't recognize love. But the easiest way to get it started is by being the source of it.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I feel like even the things you're talking about, the things that we take for granted, the fact that we're taken care of is a form of love. Right. So I'm kind of observing this right now. So my daughter is almost 3.5 months now, and she can't ask for things, right? Like, she doesn't have the language. She can cry and she can show us in different ways, but her mom is taking care of her, right? So watching my wife, just knowing everything, like sometimes my daughter will be crying in a way and I'm holding her and I don't know what's going on, but my wife will be like, no, this is exactly what she needs right now, right? So there's this sense of, even from the baby's perspective, that maybe she's taking it for granted that I'm being taken care of in the same way that you were talking about, but that is a source of love and it's always there. So anyways, that was just something that was coming up for me as sort of a bit of a reflection based on things I'm observing around me as well. But yeah, I think the...
Let's pull that thought just a little bit more.
Sure.
And it's the transition from childhood, where you're the recipient of a lot of love, and your role in the family is just to be.
Yes.
And if we look at adulthood, where we're interdependent, it is you're creating so much love that it overflows into other people. You're supporting other people. But in between there is adolescence. And that's where one of your children are. You're trying to figure out your role of, what does it mean to be an adult? Now I have to create, but what do I create? And I have no skills. I have no knowledge of this world. So you try to posturize like you know it all. This is later adolescence. You're not there yet. But in younger adolescence, it's just like, you're trying to be observant and take it all in to understand and make sense of this. And it's in that transition of, how do I care for other people when I've been taken care of? And how even do I care for other people? Like, I'm a kid. Where does my voice fit into this? That's why adolescence is so confusing, because it's in transition. Every time there's transition, there's tension, confusion, because forces are pushing and pulling. So, And that's the work I do in the point of human development, but specifically at this transitional phase.
Yeah, and it's definitely an interesting time. So what gives you, coming back to hope, what gives you hope when you're working with adolescents, and how do you get them to have hope, right? Because that can be such a challenging time, and we see, especially on the mental health side of things, I see a lot of adolescent men or boys struggling at times and unable to, and sometimes that even goes into early adulthood, where they're really having a hard time finding meaning in their lives or connecting to a deeper sense of purpose.
You said a lot of things there. First of all, it was hope, which I had a thought for.
Yes.
And then it was layered with young men. And then in society and like this day and age, there's a lot to say there. Hope is knowing that there's a brighter future. This comes from a guy named Rick Snyder in the States. He studied positive psychology. Knowing that there's a better future, knowing that there are pathways to it, multiple pathways, and knowing that I have agency to take the next step on the path. The reason I'm hopeful is because, I know there's a better future, and I'm actively taking steps towards that. Now, mind you, I also know that I can die on the pathway anytime. I have a certain relationship with death that I don't know, may or may not resonate with some people, but just like with Martin, if Martin Luther King, if I'm on the pathway working towards something and I don't realize it, like I know that I'm doing my honest part and purposeful part on the pathway to it. And I'm finding fulfillment in that moment.
Mm.
So that's in regard to purpose and hope. Now I have that because from a young age, there was perpetual purpose. It is, I was part of a faith community where there's an understanding the world needs me. Where I have a unique voice in this to show up. And that's why I do work with people who have an understanding of that. And again, you could be agnostic and atheist even, but it's understanding that you serve a purpose into something greater. A lot of men don't have that because when we come down to identity, we are the stories we tell ourselves. When we look at social media, and again, even to remove the name social media, when we look at something that was specifically engineered to hold our attention, fracture it, and stoke us with fear, we are the stories of fear. We are the stories we tell ourselves. And then you get caught into an algorithm where this incites you, or excites you rather, and it's sensational. And then you get down that rabbit hole continually, regularly, and that starts to groove those understandings that we live in a place to be feared. Specifically for men, it's tough being a man out there. It's tough being. Life is inherently stressful. I think specifically for men and in, I'm going to say the economically developed part of the world. Some people might say Western world, but those with places of economic privilege. It has different value systems. One that doesn't value relationships, but one that values power, status, control, pleasure. And when that is seen as what a man should be and they're defined by, you're going to burn out quickly. You're going to get it on the path and you're going to realize this is not, that's what midlife crisis is. It's like this is, but midlife crisis is happening much sooner, especially when you see other people achieving money, power, status, and pleasure at an early age and being burnt out. Relationships are being broken down. We look at the apps and what dating is and what, like, relationships. That's what it really comes down to. Relationships with ourselves, relationships with others, our loved ones, and our relationship with our community. That's why I love the work you're in, the work I'm in. Maybe we're preaching to the choir, but it's relationships.
Well, I think, no, and I agree. And this is the one thing I see. Sometimes men get fixated on just their role as a provider. And in that, I mean, financially providing for their families, which I think is noble, right? But it's sometimes we get stuck in that tunnel vision. And in my conversations, I often have to bring up the fact that, yes, part of our role, if we have a family, and family can mean different things too, right? But if you have a family, yes, if you look at your role as providing financially, that's just one aspect of it. And we lose sight of the role we have as men to provide emotionally with our presence. And if we don't have that relationship with ourselves where we're not grounded, we're not centered, then we're not providing with our presence. And sometimes it's just that perspective of recognizing as if you're around children or anyone in your life, if you're not providing with that presence, the financial aspect doesn't really matter that much in the long run. So anyways, that's been my experience.
Yes, and.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Well, I'm thinking of Jared Clifton. He's also from MAPS, Masters of Applied Positive Psychology. He has this framework called primals. It's the lens through which we see the world. And the yes for me comes regardless of your socioeconomic background. If you feel that you are loved, That is, there's something out there that is looking out for my well-being. You grow up with, go look into the studies. I don't want to put words into his mouth, but you grow up with more mental resilience or better understanding of the world. That again, as an atheist or an agnostic, it's this world is benevolent, or they're benevolent pieces of the world that I know what love is, the experience of love feels like. And you're right. You don't need a certain amount of in your bank account to express love. But I do want to underscore when you're under resourced, like caretaking, nurturing is resource intensive. That's hospitals, that's education. That's the pink collar jobs, I call it. But I mean, it, oftentimes they're seen as feminine jobs. But to nurture somebody, there's a beautiful book, The Magic of Caretaking. While we call them heroes and sometimes it's glamorized, there's a section on there talking about male nurturing. There's an aspect of like masculine nurturing is needed. And I love how you said it's presence oftentimes. It's holding that space for maybe a woman to express herself. Like you are the frame by which she dances around you. Like if that's how the polarities meet. But you're right. There's a loss of male presence in nurturing. And we have to understand it is resource intensive. So I understand when people don't have resources, how it's hard to care for others.
Yes. Yes. No, and I agree. I appreciate you adding that additional layer. It's what I see is when it's excessive, right? So yes, at a baseline, you need to have that baseline resource availability. But beyond that, when people get too fixated on that is the only thing I can do, then that's where the focus is sometimes misaligned or the orientation isn't in the right place. But I think part of it is also an aspect of shame I see where men will say, my inherent value is in just this realm of providing. And to your point, the nurturing sometimes gets lost, right? And then one of the things you had shared with me were the four S's. Are you able to talk about that? Because I think this comes in as well based on everything we're talking about.
Yeah, I call it the four S's of a secure family, the four S secure family framework. So the first three S's draws from secure attachment theory, specifically Dan Siegel's work. Wonderful book, Parenting from the Inside Out. Well, and wonderful anything that he writes. Yeah, man, he's contributed a lot to the understanding of the brain, understanding how society works, understanding how people work. So I'll always be good. The three S's are to be safe, that is physically safe and psychologically safe. And again, that comes down to I can be myself without fear of threat. To be seen. Seen means there's an empathetic witness. Something outside of myself that can see my inner world and help me make it make sense. Something that can see my outer world and help me make it make sense. To be safe, to be seen, and to be soothed. Soothed is when the inevitable ruptures of life come. I know that I can be restored and made whole. Those three S's are what we as parents, caregivers, teachers, mentors, and guides do for the next generation, for our learners, for our children, for so on. I'm not a parent, but my dad's calling me right now, actually. Interesting. But I've worked with parents my whole life as an educator. So those are the three things that we do for our community, for the next generation and so on. When we do those three things, the part that's missing and that's needed is an invitation to expression. It's what I call a sovereign expression, an expression they can own. So they actively create security by creating something of service to others. I could speak from my experience. When I felt down and out utterly, like when I hit bottom, it's, I know life supports those who support life. From a young age, I was part of an organization that said, be a servant of God and a friend of man. And like that was instilled in me. I grew up with that understanding, be of service, enter to learn, depart to serve. That's in my DNA. And I respect that in all forms in which it comes. Like people are doing what they, as they were taught growing up. I know in my adulthood and now in my wiser age, not as wise as you, that is great to you, but I know my wiser age, that is true. That is true. Like, we need a sovereign expression that we can own to say, yes, I know who I am. I know how I'm serving. Now, mind you, human development goes through that cycle of breaking your identity and rebuilding it, breaking your identity and rebuilding it, breaking your identity. Mm. At each stage, if you are secure and you're securing others, when you reach the end, you're either one of two people. You're either bitter or you're better. And bitter people reflect on it and they say that there's a sense of regret. But then better people are just like, okay, I've lived my life well. What can I pass on to the next generation? So that's what the four S's are. So being safe, seen, soothed, and then a sovereign expression. And what we do for adolescents is we need to create that space where they feel good to express themselves, to push against, to push out. That's what express means. Express, pushing out of yourself.
Yeah, and I feel like part of the challenge is as you built that fourth S on the first three, to save, seen, and soothe, feel bringing it back to as caregivers and providers and leaders and mentors, if we're not grounded, if we don't have that relationship with self that you touched on and we talked about briefly there, then we're unable to give those three S's to other people because we don't feel that ourselves.
Yeah. That's why you do the work that you do. That's why we got to create so much that we support something beyond ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because when that happens beyond ourselves, those people feel supported. I don't know where these podcast words are going to reach, but I'm having this conversation that it might reach somebody.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah.
I mean, it reaches me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good reminder. Exactly. Well, and you talked about social media and then you're talking about the expression piece. Mm. What has, and not to just bash on social media, because I don't think that's the only problem, right? But sure, it is a problem. One of the things you talked about was the playground, right? And the form of expression it encourages. Is it actually, I mean, I think there could be, right? There's times where I've used it for that sovereign expression. But does it allow for that in its essence? And how do you create that, right? Because it's easy to fall into, well, this is the trend, right? It has to be a certain way if you want to get a response or a specific outcome, but that takes away from the whole experience of what expression is.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of nuance here, which comes from the same root of being annoyed, right? That's why it's annoying when we get to the nuance, but considering these are easy conversations. Again, media is just the channel through which something happens, the medium, right? The message in there is what influences us. And there are two points worth mentioning here. There's a tragedy of the commons. It's an idea that comes from economics. If there's something common that everybody shares, and we know that if everybody takes their fair share without overusing the resource, it could be sustained. But if one person knows that I'll benefit by taking more, it's a tragedy because then it starts to become scarce. I'm thinking of rivers or forestry or something. But if we use that concept with social media, and again, this comes down to economics. If a person knows that I can gain a lot more financially, and nothing wrong with finances, but let's just use that as an example in regards to resources, by running these ads, or running this message, and I know fear incites you, you get your attention that way. It's a tragedy of the commons because now we're just dumping a bunch of fear into this medium. The second thing I want to mention, wherever, so we see the problem there.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I want to mention is, and I'm talking to myself, not your audience, but just observing stuff to be like, okay, I want to see this, to see how others are thinking, but not being caught up in it.
Mm.
But it's like, okay, how much do I critically bring a sound mind to say, okay, if I accept all the world and then I know this exists, but mm-hmm. then not being caught up into it to say it's distracting me from my purpose over here.
Right.
Like, and that's why with, as a kid, like with teenagers, I accept all of them because they're curiously exploring things.
Mm-hmm.
But then also I want to let them know, hey, you're not a bad person for doing that. Mm-hmm. But here's what I do and why I don't do that.
Mm.
And I encourage you not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a decision you're going to have to make because it's your sovereign expression.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And that's a nuanced conversation that a lot of parents wouldn't want their teacher to be having. I'm not telling a kid to do this or do that.
Right.
But I'm saying, hey, I know you're going to explore when you mm-hmm. made, but I mean, look at this, look at that, look at that. Like, mm-hmm. and then finding myself, I'm like, am I going to get caught up inside this message? Am I mm-hmm. going to get caught up inside this thing that I know is not healthy for me in my mind?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what comes up for me around that is not to be naive and pretend like certain things don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I feel like sometimes it's the Nietzsche way of looking at, you have to almost stare into the abyss to know that it's mm-hmm. staring back at you. Right. And I feel like I've had to go through that experience myself of recognizing that there is, and maybe I'm taking it to a different place here, but there is darkness in the world and you can't just pretend it doesn't exist. And if you don't know, or if you have never confronted it, it could take you out. If you live your whole life assuming that there's no darkness, and then all of a sudden you get confronted with something extremely difficult, it can shatter you. Right. So I think it's important to know that there are these forces out there. Don't pretend like they don't exist, but choose. You have a choice. Right. And that's where that agency piece comes in.
Well, and I love that you brought up Nietzsche, and that you can create into the darkness.
Mm.
Teaching Gen Zs, like, nihilism is a pervading thought amongst them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, not to give a broad generalization, mm-hmm. but I've had this conversation more than once with them.
Mm.
And I said, looking at it through a Stoic lens, like, I believe that life is without meaning. It's not that life is meaningless.
Mm.
But life is without meaning.
Mm.
And that's where the invitation to expression comes in. It says, what will you create?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, see darkness, what will you create into the darkness? Like,
yes.
I know darkness exists out there, which is why I'm creating into it.
Right. Well, it's interesting. This is a bit of a synchronicity piece for me. I finished reading this book over the weekend. I was on a flight, so I had time to read, but it's called The Courage to Be Disliked. Yes.
Yeah.
And they present the whole Adlerian psychology, which I feel unfortunately has not gotten the same level of attention, but that's exactly what they refer to, is look at life as meaningless. You are the one who gives it meaning. And yeah, I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it, because it brings back the agency piece, right? Because otherwise, if you just assume that I'm going to find meaning somewhere, then that's not going to happen, right? And similarly, I talked about this on another episode, but a friend had sent me a video, and the idea was like, life is like a blank piece of page, right? Mm-hmm. You're the one who gives it color or whatever. So along those lines, then, I know you wanted to touch on purpose. Maybe that could be the takeaway in terms of, what does purpose mean for you? I think a lot of people talk about it now, which is a good thing. And a lot of men I talk to are also trying to determine what that purpose is for them. But how do you get teens and adolescents to think about purpose?
Okay, yeah. You refined it right at the end there. And yeah, let's answer that. Two things come to mind.
Mm.
And I'll start with the pervading thought. The pervading thought is, I want persistent purpose inside this kid's life.
Mm.
That means a ritual or something that says you're needed in this space again and again and again. Even more so, ideally, it's you are uniquely needed. Like, you have this need that we that we appreciate, that we find value in.
Mm.
An example of this is in the class when we have roles. Everybody has a role in the class and they rotate. And I'm thinking about fifth grade. Mm. But like, we pull out popsicle sticks and it's just like, okay, for this week you are. And now these are just the most mundane roles too. Mm-hmm, like, you're handing out pencils this week or you're responsible for this. Mind you, that's really, that's what a lot of corporate America was. like roles where it's just like, you're responsible for this and that AI is revealing and exposing. So now we're going to have to reevaluate what it means to be human. That's another podcast. But that's because we're always telling people add value, add value, add value. But what if we got ahead of it where we built the system, your home, that says, hey, this is how you add value. Another book worth mentioning that you may appreciate is called The Value Creation Kid by Scott. His last name starts with a D. Again, it's setting up a system by which we create value. So those are the two things. How can we have persistent purpose expressed to the kid? Because it comes in spurts, right? Or I'm feeling like when we have purpose, I'm sorry, I shifted thoughts right in the middle. But when we have purpose, we know that we belong to the system. A lot of boys, a lot of people in the next generation don't feel like they belong in the system they didn't create. And that doesn't make space for them. And that cuts across many different identities. Fill in the blank of your identity here. Be it a white male, be it an immigrant, be it, I don't know, a person who's overweight, a person, I don't know. You fit into this because this is shared humanity. There are moments when you don't feel you belong. Find the people who say, yeah, you do belong. This is how you add. And it's harder for those who need to be taken care of. Like, how do you tell your three-year-old daughter you belong in this place? It's easy for you. But when my child is more valuable than yours, we will always be at war. And maybe I'm getting into the nuanced part of the conversation, but to answer what you said is make sure your kid feels they belong. You show them how they add value. You create environments for them to add value, i.e. you appreciate them. You say you notice this. And then you invite them to create into the space to add value. And so, yeah, I'm seeing how you are adding value. Then they're just like, oh yeah, this space, this place needs me. I'm here in rural Bahamas because I feel this space needs me for the unique life that I've lived that I'm going to model in other rural areas of the world through technology, ideally. But I mean, I have a vision and purpose for the world that I believe needs me to bring my story. And believe me, when you're down and out, we are the stories we tell ourselves. Yeah.
Yes.
That's why I feel I have purpose when I'm knocked on my back.
As you were sharing that, one of the things that was coming up for me is this whole idea. We tend to put everyone in a box. Be this way. Be like this person. And it, sometimes it's not as explicit, but it's implied, right? And there was another thing you touched on, which I have definitely taken to heart for myself. And I try to remind other people that we all have a unique set of skills, a unique purpose. And if we're trying, based on the conditioning we received or how we were raised, sometimes we may fall into that box or sometimes we may be looking at someone else, and maybe again, social media makes that a bit easier to do nowadays, where you look at someone else's life and you want that, and you lose the whole perspective on your uniqueness and how you can define what your purpose can be in your own unique way. And I don't, and I'm looking to you to understand that. How do you get someone in their teens to understand that? I know for me, I realized that much later in life through different experiences, until I was able to shed all the layers and the veils and realize that, well, here I am. I am a unique individual doing something completely different and on a path of my own. And that gives me purpose.
It's new devil, new level. It's the same thing, just at a new level. I think the unique gift, let's call it, that people who are part of a community of faith is that you are unique. You are particular. It taught me how to be odd and be thought of different, knowing that I'm being in integrity with myself and my creator. And mind you, I'm saying this thinking of many different faith cultures, but I know how, as I grew up, I was just like, I'm not doing anything to you, but yet I'm receiving this messaging that. So that was that devil for that stage. Mind you, I don't necessarily practice my belief as I did when I was an adolescent, but I knew the refinement of it. I did get the understanding, be in integrity with who you are at this young age. I think that is what was instilled in me at that time. And then even when I wrestled with it and it broke, and then it's just like, okay, who are you? And that sense throughout, I think I'm going to be experiencing this until I grow old. Like, that is what the human experience is.
Yes.
And when you can, when I say I love America and I'm waiting for it to love itself, like, America was founded on some certain beliefs, but when you can start to embrace that and then fix that, you can't fix what you can't name or what you don't call out. And it's yet to call that out. Again, sorry, that's in politics, and that's not even your nation, but in a general sense.
Yes.
Not until we have open conversations about where we're falling short. And this is what to be soothed is. To name what it is that we don't want to identify or don't be, and then take active steps to making it right. How do we do this? I guess following the 4S secure family framework. Like, for me, that's human development.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's not to make it political, but I do agree with you that America was founded on certain values, and a lot of it was on that individual uniqueness, and the message has been lost, right? And you're not seeing that being valued, what each individual brings.
I will say this. Saying it was established on the unique individuality or, you know, individual identity. That's a nice, pleasant way of putting it. A more stark, like with more gravitas, it was founded on not recognizing the other. I'm thinking of when they killed off swaths of buffaloes, just despite the Indians that were there. They didn't recognize the other of the land. They didn't recognize the other of the tribes. When it was built on the backs of indentured servants, they weren't recognizing the life of these people. And they're backbiting to those in positions of power towards each other. It's not recognizing the other. For me, that's not individualism. Like, there's a place for personal development. But personal development is to be in service to others. So we can hold Western values and still have a healthy society. But when we do not recognize others, when we stop caring for other people, that's where we fall apart. There's a beautiful book called The Sum of Us. And in a story, what it is there were pools in communities And this comes to the racial divide of America, which, again, I grew up in America and I grew up in the South too. Mm-hmm. But they filled the pools with cement because they said, I wouldn't want you swimming there. And now nobody gets to swim there, white or black families. Mm-hmm. That's a lot like healthcare. It's like, I don't want you to have something good, so all of us can't have something good. Mm-hmm. And again, that's another conversation I'll have with my American friends. So, yeah.
Well, I think you can expand that beyond politics. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost. I've experienced this too and seen it firsthand where same idea, right? In order for you not to have something, I will burn everything down, including myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what did we do with that? I guess boundaries are what I decide to do. So you remove yourself and you create security. Well, one last thing before we end, it's the three things of privilege I always say is one, there's no greater privilege than to be who you are. Everybody else is taken. There's no greater privilege to be who you are. I've already said it, but it's the duty of privilege, especially when you understand the duty of privilege is the security of others. And the third is when it is told, they will know. It is a privilege to hear your story.
And you get to write that story, right? So as much as we're talking about how we've touched on darkness in different ways, but you still get to choose light and you can write that story. And that's, I think there's something powerful there. And I've had various conversations around, even from a spiritual sense, one person choosing light can have an impact on so many. So we shouldn't lose sight of that through all of it.
Yes,
right?
And. Mm-hmm. Yes, and sometimes you don't realize who the audience is, even if it's an audience. And I come back to Anne Frank. She was writing in her journal. There are people in the Gaza Strip right now experiencing stuff, like fighting for survival. The father who wrote his poem, I want to remember his name. I'm going to look it up after. Wrote the poem for his daughter. He then passed. You write the story for yourself as you're living it.
Yes.
But it may echo on into the eternity of time. Marcus Aurelius, my namesake. He was writing what it means to be a good person trying to live inside a crazy world. And his book was meant to be lost in antiquity, but his servant saved it. And now it was a guiding book for me in my life. Even if you write that, your story for an audience of one, like write it. You don't know where it's going to go after.
Yeah. That powerful message at the end there. So I think we can leave it there, but how do people find your work? Where do they find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. Search my name on LinkedIn, I'm Aurelius Higgs. The company I have is ParentWise, secure parents create secure teens create secure futures. And the website is getparentwise.com. I work with globally mobile families with children in international schools, but I work with parents.
All right. Well, share all of that. Share all of that, but thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for reaching out. Yeah, you holding this podcast is an invitation to expression as well. And you're a wonderful host bringing it out. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. No, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. And I walk away thinking about things just in terms of how you frame them. So I really appreciate the energy you bring and your willingness to have these discussions. So appreciate all of that.
Hey. and I'm going to have more gray next time I see you. All right. To match you.
Yeah. Well, you just got to let it grow out. All right. Thank you for checking out this episode with Marcus. As always, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. That's the best and easiest way to support this podcast. And on Apple and Spotify, you can leave up to a 5-star review. Please check out the sponsors in the description, as well as the Easy Reflections newsletter, a zero-cost newsletter that goes out weekly, where I explore different mental health topics and provide practical tips and insights for the reader.
The link to the newsletter can be found in the show note captions, where you can subscribe directly. Thank you again, and until next time.